7:03 on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. AJ from AJ's Pizza is going to join us in just a moment here. Hour two of this program is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec. To the phone lines we go. It's AJ from AJ's Pizza on East Broadway. Try AJ's traditional New York pizza or sink into their famous Detroit pizza. Only at AJ's Pizza. Order online at AJ's.pizza. AJ joins us now on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, AJ? How are you?
Great. It's Fiesta Fridays. How could I be bad?
Oh, my God. Fiesta Fridays are the best.
You know what?
You know what else is the best? Is the New York Yankees, my friend. Best record in baseball right now. I'm staring directly at Laddie as I say this. I know you want to ask Laddie about the Jays, so go ahead and ask him about that.
I just want to know, is tonight's actually start for Guzman? Like how peril is that if he doesn't pitch well? And his velocity is down like another, as it's been.
What was the question?
I just want to know, because Guzman's on the mound, and obviously everybody knows he's a bit banged up. And his last start, what did he give up, like six in the first?
Laddie looks confused right now. What's going on?
You're talking Ronald Guzman.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know who this guy is. I'm just happy you're enjoying the Yankees while Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton are still walking for the 20 games of the season that they are going to contribute.
That is very fair. That is very fair. Yeah, the season is young.
Okay, we got two things here that we need to get to. One, this weekend, another huge sports weekend, so a great time to be at AJ's. You've got the all-day happy hour on Sunday, which is, of course, going to be the final of the Masters and what have you. Saturday, Canucks game, 7 o'clock. We've also got a Whitecaps game and everything else that night. But what do you guys have on for Saturday game day specials at AJ's?
We got the $6 pints of Strange Fellas all day, every day on game day, so that's going to be awesome. And then, you know, it's Saturday. What a weekend with the Masters, hockey.
Now, Teresa sent this along, and this is for all of our listeners that want to get in on some extra AJ's giveaways. Not only are we doing the $100 gift card today, if you follow AJ's on Instagram, all you got to do is contact them via DM and with an Ask Us Anything and a pizza emoji. If you do that, you will receive two tickets to the April 16th game against the Flames, a $200 gift card to AJ's, and some AJ swag. And there's bonus points if you wear it to the game against the Flames on the 16th. So again, to qualify, you need to follow AJ's on Instagram, send them a private DM with an Ask Us Anything and a pizza emoji included into your question. Then you're going to deck them out in the custom AJ's hat, right?
Oh, yeah. You know what? I know. I might jump into that contest, too. That's amazing.
Hey, AJ, thanks for doing this today, bud. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, everybody.
Good luck with
yeah,
the contest.
You guys too. Take care.
That's AJ from AJ's Pizza on East Broadway. So a reminder, follow them on Instagram. Send them a DM with an Ask Us Anything and a pizza emoji. You could win two tickets to see the Flames game on the 16th. $200 gift card and some AJ's swag.
Gossman. He was talking about Kevin Gossman.
Right.
Thanks for the texters for deciphering that for me. I was like, Juan Guzman's back?
Yeah, yeah. That's a New York accent.
A little old now.
I thought he was talking about Ronald Guzman.
Ask Us Anything, unsigned here. If you could plant your lawn chair at any hole on any day at any golf tournament, where are you sitting and why? I'd probably take 16 at the Masters, par 3 there. That'd be pretty cool.
Did you watch a lot of the Masters yesterday?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I felt badly for Tiger because he has to wake up so early to finish his round this morning.
He's playing 23 holes of golf.
Yeah, he's got to play a bunch of holes. And like sometimes you can get, you can get screwed by weather. You can get screwed by when your tee time is. And, you know, some of those guys, like it was the guys that were out early yesterday that seemed to put up the lowest scores. But I mean, Tiger's got that crazy consecutive cuts made streak on the line at the Masters. I hope he makes the cut. He played reasonably well. I don't know where he's at right now, but I think if I were to set up my lawn chair, and it'd be 16 at the Masters.
So the takeaways that I had from the Masters yesterday was Tiger was one under, tied for 17 through 13 holes, which means he's got to play five this morning and then another 18 today. Scottie Scheffler, bogey-free 66, one back of the leader, Bryson DeChambeau. Currently the leader at seven under par, shooting an opening round 65. Now, I did a lot of golf research last night. Believe it or not, I actually did research for the show I didn't even show up to this morning. He's done this in majors past where he's gotten off to a really good start in the opening round and then kind of petered in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched him putt. What's going on there? Because that looks like the most awkward, uncomfortable, stiff, and stilted sporting movement, not even just golf, sporting movement, period.
Well, thank you for catching up on the golf.
I had no idea.
DeChambeau has been putting like that for a while.
I don't watch golf.
It is very...
It looks awful.
Yeah, it's awkward to look at. He takes everything scientifically, right? So he tries to use... Like, there's not a lot of... I'm sure there's some feel to his game, but
so is he trying to make his upper body into? Is he trying to make his upper body into like a pendulum?
He's all about like levers and all that sort of thing.
Because for those that don't know what I'm talking about, his elbows are locked. Like when you tell a 5-year-old to keep their arms straight, he's like, okay, I can do that. And then, but then he proceeds to putt an entire PGA round like, but it looks so uncomfortable.
It looks really uncomfortable on the short putts.
Yeah.
Like when you've got to grind out a 3-footer or something, like, and there's not a lot of feel to it, you know? Anyway, I mean, like, he's got the game to win at Augusta, but, you know, I'm just hoping it's a good tournament, and I hope Tiger's part of the weekend. I guess it was a little bit of a disappointing day for the Canadians, too. Corey Connors, he had the best round of all of them. Nick Taylor did not play well. So, you know, we talked to Adam Stanley yesterday about the Canadians at the Masters and frankly, the Canadians at majors and the Canadian men. Listen, Nick Taylor's win at the Canadian Open was awesome. And his win in Phoenix was awesome on Super Bowl Sunday, but there's a difference in guys that are consistently in contention at majors, and then that guys can quote-unquote win on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Adam Hadwin, Nick Taylor, Corey Connors, those guys have all proven that they can quote-unquote win on the PGA Tour. What they haven't been doing enough is it's Sunday, there's 5 holes left. Are they one of the guys that has a chance to win this tournament? And they just haven't been in that position. Even though Corey Connors, you can look at his, you know, he's had some good results at the Masters. He's never really put himself in a position to win.
Okay, so other news and notes from last night. There was actually an Ask Us Anything about this as well. We haven't mentioned it yet, and that was that the Vegas Golden Knights went ahead and did another very classically Vegas Golden Knight thing yesterday, signing recently acquired defenseman Noah Hanifin to a, wait for it, 8-year $58.8 million contract extension. That gives him an average annual cap hit of $7.35 million. The 27-year-old defenseman will now be a Vegas Golden Knight for the not-too-distant future. If you're thinking or saying aloud, hey, Halford, wait a minute. Doesn't Vegas have a lot of guys with big, long, expensive contracts? You'd be right. They now have 8 players earning at least $5 million or more just for next season. 7 of those have multiple years left, including Tomas Hertl, Jack Eichel, Mark Stone, Alex Petrangelo, and now Noah Hanifin, all of whom make a combined $42.5 million and are under contract for anywhere between 5 and 7 years. My question is this. Does Jonathan Marchessault have to, like, blackmail someone? Does he need to kidnap someone and the executive's child in some sort of taken scenario to get what he wants? How is it that a guy who leads the team with 41 goals is going to go off into this summer, presumably without a contract from the Vegas Golden Knights? Because the Vegas Golden Knights have decided to pay everybody else except for the one veteran guy who's been there the entire time and leads the team with 41 goals. Now, personally,
could they move someone else to open up the salary for him? Or do you think they're just looking at him and going,
I mean, would they put someone on LTIR? I don't know.
At your age, you're 33. We're not going to give you a big contract with term. We're just not going to do it.
No, they probably won't, because that's what Vegas does. All of this leads me back to my central goal here, which is to try and undermine everything Vegas does before the playoffs in order for them to, they could still miss. they would have to go on a crazy losing streak over their final four games, but they could still miss.
I want all the bad
vibes on the Vegas Golden Knights.
You know who I immediately thought of when this Hanifin deal was announced was Steven Stamkos in Tampa Bay. Mm. And a lot of people are like, what? What are you talking about? Because
there was
a report earlier that Noah Hanifin, and this is when he was still in Calgary, Noah Hanifin actually, if he had a preferred destination, it was Tampa Bay. And I think it's fair to say that Tampa Bay has missed Ryan McDonagh.
I'd say that.
Right? They probably need another body on the blue line. And a lot of people kind of went, well, maybe if Hanifin is an unrestricted free agent, even after he was traded to Vegas, he could still end up signing in Tampa Bay. Would that then force Steven Stamkos out, who's in kind of a similar situation to Jonathan Marchessault?
Yep.
In Vegas, in that he's a very good player and has been very important to the organization, but he is also a little bit older, and he would have a strong argument to make that he should be paid a lot and for a while, despite his age.
The reason that I brought this particular contract up with Hanifin, and I agree with you that the Stamkos angle is very interesting, is the Ask Us Anything wanted to know what the Hanifin contract meant for another player closer to here, specifically Canucks defenseman Filip Hronek, who, as many people know, is in line for a new contract at the end of the year. Now, it is a bit of comparing apples to bowling balls here, because Hronek is an RFA with Arbrights, as opposed to Hanifin, who was a pending UFA, and they bought up all 8 years of UFA with Noah Hanifin. That being said, there are some similarities between the two. They're relatively close in age. They both play on the blue line. They're both in the Western Conference, and they've got, God, I guess you could say they have fairly similar statistical outputs and where they rank on a team in terms of defenseman depth. So if you were to say, well, is the $7.35 million AAV that Noah Hanifin's pulling, could that be something comparable to what Hronek might get? I would say, yeah. I mean, I think in the Canucks world, that would be perfect, because it gives him the amount of money that he's probably seeking, but it doesn't push him past Quinn Hughes as the highest paid defenseman on the team. Now, if I was the agent, Alan Walsh, I'd probably be saying, no, I'm going to be trying to get a lot more than that out of the Vancouver Canucks or whomever Filip Hronek plays hockey for next season.
Mm-hmm. I haven't asked us anything for the crew.
Okay. That's us, by the way.
Yeah.
You guys are in the crew.
You guys are in the crew. We got dogs
crew?
In our crew.
It's a dog pound.
How big, if the Coyotes move to, the Coyotes move to Utah, and it sounds like they're going to, how much could that affect the offseason in general for the NHL? Because I want to play a clip from 32 Thoughts, and this is Jeff and Elliot talking about Ryan Smith, not Captain Canada, the owner of the potential owner of the Coyotes team in Utah, and the fact that they would expect him to be quite aggressive in the offseason.
Not only necessarily free agents, Jeff, but they're going to have the cap room to make trades.
Yep.
They've got a lot of picks. They've got a lot of prospects. They've got a lot of flexibility.
They're going to be able
to do things. And,
yeah.
You know, that's one of the things that someone said to me was, you know, in the past couple of years, you're looking at free agents. I don't have to compete with those guys. They're not at our level. Well, now they're like, uh-oh. If this guy gets this team, that's going to be one more person that we're all going to be competing against this summer. He's not coming in here to let it go the way it's been going.
That's the thing with him, right?
So
he's an aggressive sports owner that owns these teams to win. Like he strikes me as the type of guy that is enjoying his money. And while I'm sure he wants to make money off his investments in pro sports, it's also like, I want to do something cool for Utah. I want to do something cool for my home state. And, you know, just, I want to be a good sports owner because I want to win, as opposed to what the Coyotes have been for the last few years. And that is like, all right, we can't spend too much money because we don't want to be like bleeding money on a revenue basis. Has anyone seen our arena? We got like 4,000 people. Like, you know, like our revenues are not high right now. Let's just survive until we get this new rink built in 600 years. And then maybe we can spend on free agents.
So let me tell you about Ryan Smith, the prospective Utah owner. He is wealthy beyond anybody's wildest imaginations. He's incredibly wealthy. He had a software company called Qualtrics, which he launched with his family, and he's made billions upon billions of dollars. And he's you know, I don't like throwing around the term visionary, but his vision for this goes so far beyond owning a hockey team. So, for example, growing up as a kid, he played in the Utah Jazz's junior jazz youth basketball program. And he's actually named
junior jazz.
But he's name checked this as a growth opportunity in Utah as the hockey parallel. Like, he was name checking in an interview I was listening to yesterday that they have 60,000 registered youth basketball players in the state of Utah through this program. And what he was saying is that if they can replicate that at the hockey level, it's a totally untapped, fertile market, not just for hockey players, but for hockey enthusiasm. He sees Utah as this great, and again, I hate using this term because of the connotations, but breeding ground, because they've got tons of land. Mm-hmm. That's one thing he said. He's like, we have the land issues that other people have, we don't have here. We got plenty of land.
Yeah, they can get a practice facility built, no problem.
He could do it tomorrow if he wanted. He could have a practice facility by Monday, and it would be, like, ready to go. He has tons of land, tons of money, and here's the interesting thing, tons of a young population. They're making kids in Utah, lots of them,
yeah.
Repeatedly, incessantly. Right. Mm-hmm. And he kind of jokes about it. He's like, we do not have a children problem in Utah. We do not have a population problem in Utah. Mm-hmm. But what he's talking about is putting an NHL team in, but also making Utah a hockey hotbed, because you know what exists there? The opportunity, because all that's there right now is basketball. It's not unlike, despite how different the two cities
Sports
are,
Radio.
Vegas when the NHL went there, because the NHL was first. Mm-hmm. And it was an opportunity now where they were the trailblazers, and now everyone's followed suit. Everyone was waiting for someone to go there. Now, someone's already gone to Utah, obviously, the NBA, but nobody else has taken that leap. And with an owner with this kind of financial prowess, it doesn't surprise me that there's these messages that are out there now from Friedge and Merrick that when they get this team, mm-hmm. they're going to be really aggressive. You know what the blueprint is do everything the opposite of what the Arizona Coyotes had done. Don't be cheap anywhere. Don't scrimp in free agency. Don't tank to get draft picks. Now that you've got all these draft picks, try and elevate.
Trade them.
Yeah, trade them. Make a competitive team right away.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really interesting thing. So for those that are a little bit skeptical, and believe me, there's reasons to be skeptical about Salt Lake. Like, the arena is not ideal.
Yeah.
There's no really proven history of hockey there, despite the fact that Ryan Smith played roller hockey growing up, and they had an IHL team and an ECHL team. There's not a huge hockey history there.
I just wonder what the season is going to be like, because there's a potential for that team to be really aggressive in trades, trading away some of the picks that it's racked up, trading away even some of the young players that it has in order to create a more competitive team now. There's the potential for them to be aggressive in free agency because they got plenty of cap room. Here's another thing to think about. How many players on that Coyotes team are going to be like, you know what? I didn't sign up to live in Utah.
Yeah.
And no disrespect to Utah. Some disrespect to Utah.
They're a little bit inherently.
But I don't really want to be part of this organization anymore if it means, like, I just don't want to, that's not what I signed up for, so trade me.
But that might even work in their advantage as well.
No. I'm not saying whether it's good or bad or whatever.
Oh, I know.
All I'm saying is, like, there's the potential for the Utah whatevers to be major players in the offseason.
That's kind of what I was alluding to.
Yeah.
Like, that may work to everything that's on the table right now could either work against Utah mm-hmm. or work in their favor.
They should, by the way, you know how it's kind of funny that it's called the Utah Jazz?
Yes.
Like, you don't think of Salt Lake as, like, the jazz capital of the world, and that's because they moved from New Orleans, right?
That's correct.
Okay. What would it would be funny if they went with another, like, very anti-Utah, like, what would that be? Like, the Utah Brewers? Like,
yep.
Something like a drinking connotation? Or just like or you can, you know how they have names like the Miami Heat?
Yes.
You know, how about like the Utah Sex?
Utah Abstinence?
You ruin things. No, the complete opposite.
Something that is the antithesis of the city and the state.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz music, not exactly prevalent in Salt Lake and Provo.
But they just kept the name.
So
because
an
the
abstinence
team moved.
Isn't either, since it's a breeding ground, as you said. So
well, that's true. That's true.
No,
see,
no,
my
no.
humor is too different smart kind of for you guys, I think, as
well.
Well,
that was 4D.
And you're not even like, I'm thinking 10 moves ahead of you.
But that's, no. Abstinence is a huge part of the culture there because you have to.
But you just say that they're always breeding kids and stuff. There's always
when they're
kids.
Married. What do they do until they're married?
Yeah,
they
but it's
abstain.
Not like
abstain.
Yeah.
So like you can't say that it's not a huge part of the culture.
Utah abstainers.
No, you got it. We really need to get off the abstaining part, guys. I feel like we've missed the boat. He had a good punchline because it was also singular. The Utah sex.
No, we got
can
your
you
attention.
Imagine? Can you imagine the beginning of the games and. Please welcome to the ice your Utah sex.
You can have shirts that say congratulations,
oh,
on, the se- congratulations on the sex. Yeah. That would be a good one. Yeah, there's lots of opportunities here. Okay, we're going to get serious here, folks.
We probably aren't.
No, we just named the team the Utah sex. But coming up on the Halford
first
eruption,
overall draft pick goes to the Utah sex.
Congratulations.
I want to hear Bettman say it.
he's like, why? You know what? I'm just going
to
retire.
You know Bill, what? You guys are going back to Arizona.
Bill yeah. Daly, this is your job now. Okay. We got a lot more to get to on the Halford and Ruff Show on Sportsnet 650 coming up. We're going to talk a little Edmonton Oilers with Jason Greger from Sports Talk Edmonton. We'll talk to him about tomorrow night's opponent. The Edmonton Oilers play tonight against Arizona, and then they've got a huge game against the Vancouver Canucks. Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada, Rogers Sportsnet, 7 o'clock from Rogers Place in Edmonton. You are listening to the Halford and Ruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd.
And Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
/7:31 on a Fiesta Friday. I like it. It's a little more down tempo. Like it's the end of the fiesta. You're right. Still having a good time, but you know the end is nigh.
The trumpet's going off, though.
Mm-hmm.
You've had one too many cervezas. One more, por favor.
I bet Pedro likes this song.
Dog,
yeah, he's from Cabo. He's from Cabo.
I feel like you should probably explain who Pedro is in this situation.
Everyone knows who Pedro is.
Not
after
everybody.
He went missing?
Yeah, I know, but not everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Pedro stops whatever he's doing. His eyes go out of focus. He's transported back home.
I actually really don't like that he's going to be a supporter of Mexico at the World Cup. He told me.
They have to qualify first.
Yeah.
Oh, no, they're
no,
qualified.
They're qualified. They're one of the hosts. Yeah.
Forgot. Pedro's an automatic host.
Yeah.
For those that don't know, Pedro is a... rescue dog that you got from Mexico.
Mm-hmm. And then he went missing and got hit by a car. And
yeah.
Now I'm poor.
Right. He's also part of the Juarez cartel.
Yeah, he makes a lot of phone calls.
Yeah. He just goes missing at weird hours of the night.
Yeah, he's got this sat phone.
A bunch of strange packages always showing up at the door.
What is going on here?
Yeah, he's not now, Senor Bruff. He's on the phone. You are listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program.
A long tunnel under the house going all the way to Mexico.
Yeah. He dug it himself.
I'm watching TV and all of a sudden like Chapo walks out of the closet. I'm like, what is going on in this house?
See, that's a good bit because dogs love to dig.
He is a good digger,
yeah,
actually.
That's
yeah.
it. Where did you go? Juarez. Jason Greger is going to join us in just a moment here. The Canucks are in Edmonton tomorrow night. Oilers have back-to-back games. Oilers have games pretty much every day of the week until the end of the regular season now. We are in hour two of the program, by the way. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made. Joining us now, as mentioned, he is host of the Jason Greger Show on Sports 1440 in Edmonton. Jason Greger joins us now on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Jason. How are you?
I'm good, gents. You?
We're good as well. Let's run through some of the health updates here. Connor McDavid, is this all just purely precautionary at this point?
No, he tweaked something late in the Calgary game, probably with like, I don't know, 5 minutes left. So nothing serious. It's the old adage, if it was playoffs, you know, they'd play through it, which I always kind of chuckle at. I'm like, yeah, guys playing playoffs, but they're really how – how much can they help? Like, if a guy plays hurt in the playoffs and plays like crap, they're probably better off sitting him out. But anyway, no, he'll be, I think the, you know, they're going to play, there's no chance he's playing back-to-back games coming right off an injury. So I fully expect him to not play tonight. And then, it's not 100% that he'll play tomorrow, but I think there's obviously a much better chance he'll play tomorrow. I think there's no chance he plays tonight.
How much are the Oilers looking forward to getting another crack at the Vancouver Canucks? Because the Canucks were maybe the main team that got them off to that dreadful start that resulted in a coaching change. Even though the coaching change has been probably good for the team in that they're playing a lot better and they could even win the division, I imagine they're looking to get some semblance of revenge against the Canucks. Oh, yeah, and also first place in the division.
Yeah, I think the first place is probably the bigger thing. Although, you know what? Certain athletes like Michael Jordan, right? You find any reason to be pissed off in a game and find something that motivates you. So, the Oilers, they'll never say it, which is kind of boring. You know, very few players or teams will come out and say, you know what, we want to. But, yeah, it's not that the Canucks won. The Canucks embarrassed them, especially in the season opener. So, I would think that that there would be something there. But the added juice is the fact that, you know, the Oilers win tonight. That game on Saturday really comes down to first place, right? If Vancouver wins that game, then they'll be 4 points up, and Edmonton only has 3 games left. Like, pretty much, you know, it's over. But Edmonton wins, then they're tied, and Edmonton still has a game in hand, and two of those games are against San Jose and Arizona. So, you know, I really think Saturday night's going to come down to first place. And the Oilers have become a real dominant team on home ice, and I think they would like first place. Ultimately, I don't think it matters. You know, we've seen Tampa and lots of these other teams win the Cup, not being the first place team. And we saw Boston last year. So I don't think it matters a whole bunch. But, like, if I'm Vancouver, I think it matters because they would much rather play Nashville right now than play L.A. Like, there's certain teams that are just bad matchups, and L.A.'s a bad matchup.
I think it's also maybe a bit psychological with the Canucks, too. Like, if they officially don't win the division, then they officially kind of back into the playoffs as well.
Yeah, that could be part of it, right? Especially because you look at, you know, like Edmonton, you know, has gained, what, 27 points or 29 points on Vegas since December 20th, which is kind of crazy. They've gained a lot on Vancouver. But, you know, the Canucks are still a good team. Like, I look at the Canucks and I would say, like, right now I still think Edmonton's a better team just based on what they've done for the last 4 months. They've been the best team in the NHL by quite a ways. But, you know, Vancouver's good, and the playoffs are a different beast, and we'll see, you know, how they react to it. I think they're built better than some other teams who haven't had a lot of playoff experience going in. Like, I like a lot of the makeup of Vancouver, but as you guys know better than me, it all comes down to Demko. If they don't have Demko, and even if he comes back, he's got to be good. If he's not good, they don't have a chance.
How are Oilers fans feeling about the goaltending right now in Edmonton?
I guess it depends. There's always the naysayers. There's the vocal idiots, I like to call them, the minority ones, usually. It's always funny, right? In real life, it's the most vocal are usually the least informed. But anyway, I really don't see any reason that they have cause for concern. If you look at Stuart Skinner's numbers since the change, he's, what, second in wins. I think he's top five or six in save percentage. He's top five or six in goals against average. Now, where Skinner's one weakness is off of the rush when you go side to side. That's the one weakness that he has. Now, you know, as Kevin Woodley tells me lots, like most goalies, there is one weakness that they'll have, and that's Skinner's weakness. But, you know, Woodley's crunched all the underlying numbers and says when the play's in the zone, not coming off the rush, but, you know, cycles, different things like that, Stuart Skinner's like top three in the league. So there's really no reason to be that concerned about the goaltending. You look at Colorado, you look at Vegas, they won with guys. Like, you don't need a Vasilevskiy if you have good team defense. And the Oilers team defense has been pretty good here for 5 months. And that's always been their weakness, guys. Like, the Oilers eventually, for the last 5 years, they could go a stretch of games and they would play well. And then all of a sudden they would revert back and they'd be throwing grenades in their own zone. And the other team would score 3 goals on 4 shots and it'd be game over. And, you know, I've seen it time and time again in Edmonton. And this is the longest stretch where they've gone and been very good defensively, and specifically at 5-on-5. Right? And going into the playoffs since March 1st, the Oilers are second in the NHL in 5-on-5 goals against. And there's one stat, if you want to look at, for teams that have success in the playoffs, goals against 5-on-5 is normally one of the best indicators. It's always been the order's weakness, and it seems right now that they fixed it.
We're speaking to Jason Greger from Sports 1440 Edmonton here on the Halfman Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Canucks are in action tomorrow night, 7 o'clock from Rogers Place in Edmonton. I remember when I was in journalism school, Jason, they used to kind of praise the idea of asking open-ended questions to people because open-ended questions require the respondent to elaborate on their points. So with that, I ask, what's it been like covering Evander Kane and the Evander Kane experience this year in Edmonton?
That's a good question. Kane is who he is, guys, right? Like he's been a guy that will eventually become his own worst enemy. And now my dealings with Evander Kane personally, I've had no issue with it, but I'm not on the team. I'm not in the room. It's not like, you know, nowadays in media, it's not like you talk to guys all the time. You know how it is. There's like three available every day or four sometimes. So you know, we can get into a whole tangent about how lame that is. But, you know, Kane, I do think at times people overblow stuff. Like him and Corey Perry, I thought that was nothing, right? Like, yeah, I actually thought it was a good thing. You're trying to set a standard for your team, and the standard is no hope passes. Because even though it didn't result in a goal against, I don't even think it resulted in a good scoring chance against. But if you want to have a standard on your team, it's got to be enforced by the players. Like the coaches can start it, but ultimately it's going to be up to your players. And so I actually kind of chuckled at people trying to think that was a big deal. Like if you watch it again, first of all, there's three things to watch. Watch Stuart Skinner. If you go back and watch the video, Stuart Skinner standing there. And I actually talked to him about it afterwards. And I was like, he goes, man, I was just listening to what they say so I could tell good stories later. He goes, like, it was just funny. There's nothing really said bad there. But, Kane, the problem for Kane this year is he went the longest stretch of his life without a goal, 21 games. He's still physical. He brings an element that not many guys in the league have who can score. Like even though he's had a bad year, he's still got 23 goals, right? So it's not like it's a terrible year for a guy making $5 million. But, you know, he's still physical. I think with Kane, you have to realize that he kind of beats to his own drum. And I don't think that's ever going to change. Like any team that acquires him should not be surprised that Evander Kane is very much, he's not intimidated by anybody. I don't think he's going to adhere to, certain ways or certain boxes you want him to fit into. That's just not who he is, right? He's never going to be, I think, the guy who's like a glue guy in your room, right? That's kind of how I see Kane. Like nothing I've really seen from him in Edmonton is overly different than we've seen in the past. Now there hasn't been any major issues. There's been a little bit of squabbles on the bench. Are there some behind closed doors? Yeah. Do I think Kane was annoyed earlier in the season when he got demoted for a little bit? 100%. But I do think that, that has really quieted down here. And I don't know if it was the leadership group or the coach or Perry or Coffey or somebody said, hey, man, you get in line and we just want to win. So it's not about you personally. It's about us winning. And we'll see. Because when Kane's on his game, he can really help you. And the one thing we've seen in the playoffs from Kane is he doesn't shy away. You're not going to intimidate Kane in the playoffs, right? Some guys, you've seen it. Some guys, the game increases in physicality and they suddenly are little perimeter players. That's not Kane. Now, whether or not he scores or not, I have no idea. But he's not going to get pushed out of a series, and that's a good thing for Edmonton because they're still not the most physical team.
Good answer, by the way, because I think you're right. I think there's a lot of noise around the player constantly, and that's because of who he is and the way that he marches. Yeah. I also think there's a legitimate narrative here, and I think it's accurate, in which people are portraying this as the Oilers know that they need him to be Evander Kane if they're going to go anywhere, and they're trying to poke and prod right now to make sure that he's there. I guess my question to you is it a dangerous thing? Is it a bit of a concern that the Oilers need to rely on Kane to be Evander Kane? Or do you think they can achieve success in the postseason if he's not doing all the things that make him Evander Kane?
Well, the good thing about the Oilers this year is, like Kane's a complimentary guy on their team. Right, they got McDavid. They have Drysdale. Heck, they got Zach Hyman scoring 50 goals. Right, you got Bouchard and Ekholm as being one of the best defense pairings all season long. So, Kane slots in on that complementary tier where, and those guys are important. Don't get me wrong. You see cup winning teams. You need that. So, I think, they don't need Kane to score 13 goals in 15 games like he did 2 years ago in the playoffs. It would be great, but like I think they have enough team offense. right? Like Connor Brown has awoken and, you know, at least is chipping in now. And they got Henrique chips in and Corey Perry. Like they got enough depth scoring. Scoring isn't Edmonton's problem. Is Kane going to be, you know, reliable and not make the Holt passes, right? Because that's really what Perry got upset about, right? Was we don't want that. So they don't need Kane to dominate. They just need, I think they need his physicality. And I'd be surprised if all of a sudden in the postseason, you know, Kane is not going to finish his checks. Like he's sixth in the NHL in hits, even in a bad year where he maybe hasn't loved his game and maybe lost some confidence. He's still done the one thing that they need. And every team needs a guy like that. I think come playoff time, you need somebody who's physical. And the thing is, it's not only that just Kane's physical, guys. Like when he's big and strong enough that when he hits, guys feel it. You know, like when Ryan Nugent-Hopkins finishes his checks and he has five hits in a game, you're not really doing much damage compared to five hits from Evander Kane, right? You know, it'd be like Dakota hitting guys and Quinn Hughes hitting guys. Mm-hmm. They're both going to get five hits. One's going to be a little bit more, you know, physically draining.
How has Evan Bouchard's game evolved since he joined the Oilers or even just since last season?
If you actually look at a lot of the underlying numbers, you could make a strong argument that Evan Bouchard is probably a closer competitor to Quinn Hughes than Cale Makar is for the North this year. Like, I think Quinn Hughes is going to win. But Cale Makar, if you go dig into his numbers, he's like outside of his offensive numbers, like Bouchard, you know, now he does play with Ekholm, and I think that helps, no question. But you need two good partners, right? Bouchard has emerged. He's an elite offensive defenseman. The thing, when you watch Bouchard, that's probably the most impressive is how many times he has guys right around him. You know that meme where you see the dog and there's a fire and everybody's like, everything's okay. Yeah. Well, that's Bouchard. Like, I don't know if his pulse ever raises over like 90 beats per minute, man. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just like, oh, there's three guys on me. I'll deke around two of them. Now, sometimes people get annoyed because in certain physical battles, he's not Matthias Ekholm. Right? Like, he's not crushing guys physically. But I look and I say, well, neither does Quinn Hughes, and neither does Cale Makar, and really does Adam Fox. Like, you can't be everything, right? Like, that's why Chris Pronger was a freak, because he could be offensive and he would beat the hell out of you physically, right? That's not Bouchard's game, but I think his game's improved a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There will be I like to call it the headline plays, where people see one bad play they don't like in a game on a player. And then when he makes that once every five games, that's all they see. And they forget the 50 other really good plays he made the rest of the game.
It kind of looks like a lack of intensity at times, though, with Bouchard, right?
Yeah,
like, is that fair to say? Like, he's not necessarily throwing pizzas up the middle, but he's, like, losing a battle, and it looks like he's not trying that hard.
Yes, that's, you know what? And so I remember many years, people used to say Mary Lemieux was lazy. Like, get the hell out of here, right? Like, you know, so it is true that Bouchard, like – you know, the MacKinnon overtime goal where he goes to Lekkonen with 1 second left, right? And Bouchard kind of, you know, he goes underneath. It's funny because in a normal time of the game, that actually wouldn't have been a bad play because he's trying to be better at defense to play below the puck. And he did that. The problem is you got to know there's 5 seconds. Just go, I don't care, tackle him at that point of the game because who cares if you get a penalty, right? So those plays, but it's funny that if people will remember that play, he's going to get 90 points. Right, he's like a plus 30 or something on 5-on-5. Like he's a way more positive contributor than he is negative. Right, but so people will see the play like that, and it kind of stands out. But then I'm like, well, he could score two goals, and like two of them are unreal passes, or he's one of the best outlet passers. And people don't get as excited about the great plays as they get upset about the bad plays. Right, that's why, you know, Scout always told me the worst you can do as an analyst is focus too much on what they don't do, and you miss all the good things they do. And Bouchard does infinitely more good things than bad things. The bad things he does seem to irk people, because you're right. It comes across as maybe not that intense at a key moment.
So when you think back to the Oilers in the playoffs last season, they get through the LA Kings, and there was a time where, you know, they had to have a pretty good comeback against the LA Kings in I think it was game four.
Yep.
And then they took control of that series and they dispatched the Kings. They didn't beat the Vegas Golden Knights, though, in the next round. And I remember there was a time in that series, or maybe it might have been at the start of the series, where I was like, I think the Oilers are going to win the Stanley Cup. And then all of a sudden, did they just let their guard down a little bit? and all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, the Vegas Golden Knights have won the series and the Oilers are out. Is that how it felt to you, and is that how it felt to the Oilers? And so, and if so, how can they change that narrative this season?
Well, there's two things that happened. Well, the first four games are crazy, right? It was high scoring. Like, the Oilers blew them out twice. Vegas basically blew them out twice, although the one game, Dreisaitl had four goals, I think, in game one to keep it close. But so you get to game five and six. And in that series, the biggest false narrative was that Vegas's depth guys beat them. The depth guys scored a few crucial goals. It was Jack Eichel's line that murdered them. Eichel was outscored he'd outscored them 8-1, 5-on-5, and Marchessault and Barbashev were 7-2. Like, that line killed them. And the mistake was partially the players, partially the coach. I thought Jay Woodcroft erred in that series by refusing to play McDavid against Eichel. I didn't understand it, right? Like, Jack Eichel was dominating the other lines. So put McDavid out there. McDavid is not intimidated by anybody in the league, right? Because you don't, even if he's not the greatest defender, although his defensive game has improved immensely, but he's so good offensively that very few times is he hemmed in his own zone for much times of his shifts, right? So the best defense is a good offense, and that's the case with McDavid. So I thought that was a big mistake by the coaching staff, was the matchup games in the playoffs, and they lost the matchup game. And I thought that Woodcroft got out-coached in that series. And then secondly, the players, what I talked about earlier, guys, it reared its head. Down the stretch, the Oilers, I think, were 18-1 in their last 19 games. Played really well, limited goals against, kind of erased the errors. Then they got into the LA game, and they were brutal early. They made some, you know, throw the grenade in your own zone goals against. And I like to call them gift goals. And the Oilers, for the last 4 years, guys, I would put them up against any team in the league. They were the best team at gifting goals to the opposition. Right? Like, sometimes the other team makes really good plays and scores, and you got to tip your hat. And then there's times where you make a high-danger pass at the offensive blue line that you shouldn't make, and it goes on a two-on-one, they score. And you're like, why the hell are you making that play? Or in the defensive zone, guys just leave their man, boom, it happens. And that's what happened. If you go back, you look at game six, Matthias Ekholm, of all players, now maybe it's a little bit unlucky, first shift of the game, he goes to clear the puck up the boards, puts it right into the middle of the ice, boom, on Riley Smith's stick. It's 1-0, 30 seconds into the game. And the Oilers still came back. They led in every game of that series, guys. And they couldn't hold the lead, right? They weren't comfortable playing with the lead. They either would get nervous in their own zone, and that resulted in the team tying it, or they would take too many ill-advised risks when they were leading by a goal or two that you just don't need. Sometimes live to, you know, let's just break even on this shift. And they didn't. And I think that's the one thing they've learned. Ultimately, it's a tough lesson, because Edmonton was a good team last year. I think they're better this year overall. They've got a little bit more size in their lineup. I think they got more experience now too. Bouchard and other guys on their team have more experience. But I think most importantly, they finally figured out that they kept beating themselves. Not that Vegas, like, full marks to Vegas, but if you go back and you watch a lot of their goals, look at how hard Edmonton had to work to score their goals, and then how easy at times Vegas would score because Edmonton would gift them goals. And that's not a knock on Vegas. It's a knock on Edmonton. And I think they've done a really good job of eliminating that. We'll see, though, because the playoffs are different, guys. That's what's – you love the NHL, but you kind of hate it in the sense that you play 82 games, and then you get to the playoffs, and it's completely different. Because in the regular season, like look at Edmonton. They play 5 games in 7 days, which is kind of stupid to end the season. But they play Arizona, then they play Vancouver, then they play San Jose, then they play Colorado. Like, you don't game plan against one team, right? So it's really hard at times to get an accurate portrayal. We can go by average numbers and all that stuff, and I think we know who the good teams are. But, like, Vancouver and matchups, they hate playing LA's 1-3-1. Lots of teams do. Edmonton, it took them a while to figure it out, and I think Vancouver might. But if I'm the Vancouver Canucks, I want to play Nashville. I might not say it publicly, but privately, that's the team you want, because you don't struggle against them as much as you do LA, right? I'm not saying LA is a better team, but it's a tougher matchup.
We've said it publicly, so it's fine if you say it publicly. Yeah. Nashville's the one. Like, I'm not afraid to say it. I'm fine saying it. The Edmonton Oilers begin a stretch of 5 games, as you mentioned, in 7 nights tonight against Arizona, and then they've got the Vancouver Canucks in Edmonton on Saturday. Jason, thank you very much for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Enjoy what's going to be a very busy week for the Oilers. We'll do this again come playoff time.
You bet your boys. Have a good one. Enjoy the game tomorrow night.
You too. Thanks. That's Jason Greger from Sports 1440 in Edmonton here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Since we've already riled up the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket with all this talk of another Canadian city and their local hockey squadron, how about we do an Ask Us Anything from Darcy in Vancouver? Because Darcy asks, what would it take for you guys to cheer on the Toronto Maple Leafs? Would it be an early round playoff series against the Boston Bruins? Would it be a bag of cash with a big dollar sign on it, like Monopoly?
Yeah, probably.
Would it be an evil alien race playing a game for the fate of planet Earth? The only now with
like
all
the Monstars, you mean?
That one, yes.
How big is the bag of cash?
Yeah, the cash. I'd be like
the cash. Yeah,
that one's up for grabs. The aliens, you know, I'd probably be like, okay, fine, like let's get on board. Yay, Austin Matthews, because you know it's the fate of Earth. The rest of
I'd
it,
I'd still be reluctant, but I would do it reluctantly.
There's one.
Yeah, I was like, let's see how this plays out.
Yeah, I voted for
maybe COVID. The aliens are bluffing.
Yeah,
do I want to live in a world where the Leafs win the Cup versus
I
hear the more race,
I want to hear more about this Kodo's character and what he has to say.
I don't think there's
one team that if the Leafs were playing for the Stanley Cup, that I would cheer for the Leafs.
Who?
The Vegas Golden Knights.
No.
Yep.
No.
I would.
No, the Vegas has already won the cup.
I don't care. I hate
you. You're really.
I'm all in.
Yeah.
And by all in, I'm all out. Mm-hmm. But I'm all, like, I want Vegas.
Why?
Because I want.
But why do you hate Vegas so much?
Because the Schadenfreude would not be any more delicious than it would if it came back to hit Vegas. Vegas is the team right now.
I mean, I completely disagree with you, but why? What, I'm asking you, like, why do you hate Vegas, like, or why would
Jack
it bother
Eichel
you so much if Vegas won? I mean, the answer with the Leafs is obvious. There'd be that jealousy factor. There'd be all the attention that the Leafs would get. I mean, it would be unbearable to me if Vegas won. It'd be like, eh.
No, because anytime someone, and part of it is jealousy for them going all in and going above and beyond to try and win a cup. Those are the teams that you want to lose. The teams that have invested more than anybody else. I mean, the real key would be for Vegas to miss the playoffs entirely. That's the ultimate chaos.
You still haven't answered my question, though. What is it about Vegas that you don't like?
I don't like the continual cheating against the Caps.
It's not cheating. It's using the system.
Cheating.
Don't you wish the Canucks did it like they used to?
I wish the Canucks would also cheat.
Yeah.
But it's cheating.
So you hate them because you're jealous of how they're able to manipulate the system.
I'm incredibly jealous of the way that they've been able to come into the NHL and been a huge success story from the start. I'm not going to like try and make it like a moral, noble thing. It's petty and small.
Oh, okay. Then I support you.
Yeah. But yeah,
if it's jealousy, that's fine. But like,
pettiness is underrated.
Jealousy.
But like using the system to your advantage is what all teams should be doing.
Constantly shuttling veteran players in light of the shiny new toys. A lot of unlikable people.
Like who?
Jack Eichel. Don't care for Jack Eichel.
Yeah.
I don't like Tomas Hertl anymore. I'm starting to not like Jack's, what's his name? Mark Stone. Spleen. Spleen. We don't even have spleens. But that's all made up. Yeah, it's all just one of those big science trying to pretend that we have a spleen inside of our bodies.
Do you like Rick Dhaliwal?
He's fine.
Yeah.
No, I do like Rick. He's really good. And he's coming up on the show next.
He's coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.